Welcome to Eye on Horror, the official podcast of iHorror.com. This is episode 85, otherwise known as season 5, episode 7. I am your host, James J. Edwards, and with me, as always, is your other host, Jacob Davidson. How you doing, Jacob?
Doing pretty good. Just had some of my folks visit over the long weekend, and pretty happy to be back into the swing of things.
Cool. Also with us yet again, as always, is your other host, John Correa. How you doing, Correa?
Fucking fantastic. I mean, I'm not awake. We were recording early again, but I did. I saw Bikini Kill live for the first time over the weekend. Ooh, at the Greek Theater.
Sweet.
Yeah, not the venue I thought I was going to see them at, but it was still great. And then saw Dracula season 4 tour live last night. So masked up and all that. But yeah, it was great to see two acts I've been really wanting to see live.
What's been going on, you guys? What's been happening this week?
Well, I saw something interesting. Okay, so I saw the new 4K transfer of David Lynch's Inland Empire last week.
Okay, how did that look? Because didn't he shoot Inland Empire on like a Sony DV cam?
Yeah, it was mini DV.
Yeah. How does it look upscaled?
I mean, it still looks like it was shot on mini DV, yeah. but the sound quality was substantially improved.
When I saw the 4K restoration of Texas Chainsaw, that was kind of my takeaway from that, too. It's like it still was all grainy and 16 millimeter, but the sound was insane.
Same with Evil Dead. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was definitely more in the sound quality. But yeah, that was my first time seeing that one. And you know, I just think of that bit from The Simpsons where Bart gets a fake ID and he and his friends decide to sneak into an R-rated movie, and they sneak into Naked Lunch, and then they walk out and Nelson's like, I could think of two words wrong with that title. Yeah, just
it was neither Inland nor an Empire.
Not really, especially because there was a lot of time spent in Poland, you know, which was more than I expected from a movie called Inland Empire. And yeah, I mean, it does feel like, you know, it's kind of a spiritual or whatever continuation of Mulholland Drive because it deals a lot with Hollywood. But yeah, I don't know. It deals a lot with movie making, but it just goes all over the place, and it's over 3 hours long, and there was a crazy ass musical sequence with the song Locomotion and these women that might be ghosts or prostitutes or ghost prostitutes. And Laura Dern just slowly going completely insane. It is an interesting movie. No doubt. I mean, I was talking with a friend and we considered it was like a Rorschach test of a movie. There's no foundation, you know, it's just it's all up to interpretation. And yeah, no, just, and it is genuinely nightmarish, just between sequences of like people dressed up as rabbits and like this horrible distorted like phantom that's following Laura Dern and people just kind of fading in and out of existence, and Harry Dean Stanton just kind of looking ominous. Yeah, it's just pure uncut David Lynch. And I've seen most of his movies, so I am glad I was able to finally get around to that one, though. And even though it was 3 hours, it just kind of flowed by quick seeing it theatrically.
I guess that's what you get when you give David Lynch basically unlimited film, because DV cam tapes are so cheap.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely a lot of it experimental because David Lynch just had his own camera and he was just running with it,
which is just a fun image to have in the head. Just David Lynch running around with a mini DV camera, just, oh, we got to shoot this.
Yeah, he's on Hollywood and Vine.
Well, I went out and saw the new, what I said in the last episode, my most anticipated film of the year, Hatching, from Finland. It was directed by Hanna Bergholm, and wow, what a weird movie. It's about this girl who finds like an abandoned crow egg from a crow that her mother killed, and she starts raising it and it starts growing to really big size, and it ends up becoming like a doppelganger bird, but it's like transforming throughout the movie. And those sequences are really weird, very creepy, very goopy. But that's not the weirdest part of the movie. The weirdest part of the movie is the mother. And I don't want to say anything more about her because I don't want to spoil any of the fun. But like, that was just such a weird, atmospheric, great movie. Like the mom is a our life
influencer.
She's an influencer. Her vlog is our life is perfect, or our life is always beautiful, is like the thing. And it's like an undertone for like everything, where she presents this like perfect life, but you know, her decisions cause everybody pain. And it's really, I'm really excited to see what this director does next, because there's some really interesting like parallels between like their perfect, clean, pastel life and like the bloody goopiness of what's happening with the hatching and stuff. And oh man, it just stuck with me. But I was really weirded out that there was a family that brought their like 5-year-old to this. I don't know what fairy tale they thought it was going to be. Like, I don't even know if that child was old enough to be reading subtitles, but that kid definitely had a day.
They got to learn someday.
Exactly. And then that was kind of a double feature, because when we got home, we've finally watched We're All Going to the World's Fair.
Ooh, I love that one.
I was about to say, Jacob, I think you saw that one already, right?
Yeah, I actually saw that last year. They did a premiere screening at Sundance, although funny enough, I was going to see it again in theaters tonight. So I was pretty excited about that.
Dude, I'm so down to see it again, because there was so much to unpack with We're All Going to the World's Fair. What a creepy.
Yeah.
It really did a great job of conveying that feeling of like it's 4 o'clock in the morning and you somehow ended up in that weird part of the internet where all you're doing is reading creepy pastas and you need to go to sleep, but you can't let yourself go to sleep because you're properly creeped out. And that was like the feeling of the entire movie. There's no reliable narrators in it, and it just like I'm still to you know thinking about like those images that are in it. Like Jay Schobrun is just fantastic and exciting filmmaker, and I can't wait to see what else they bring.
Speaking of unreliable narrators, I don't think I told you, Korea, I watched the After Party.
You did?
Oh my god,
it sucked you in.
Right? You were totally right. It was awesome. And like when it got to the musical, because you know, if you didn't listen to our episode where we talked about the After Party, basically every episode shows the same thing from a different point of view, a different character's point of view. And one of them is a musician. So his every episode's a different style as well. Like there's an artist and it's an animated episode, and the musician, it's a musical. And that one just killed me, you know, because they like break into song and
yeah.
you were totally right though. It's so worth watching. It's so much fun.
Apple TV, dude, it's $5 for 1 month. There's enough programs on it that you can spend your month watching a lot of great stuff, especially After Party.
And you can watch Coda, the Academy Award winning Best Picture, because that, I think that's the only way you can watch it. Apple's riding that horse.
Yeah.
I saw something really cool. I haven't seen much since we last talked, but I saw Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Ooh.
And this one is the one people have been waiting for, because it's directed by Sam Raimi. So horror fan, and let me tell you, it is a Sam Raimi movie.
Good.
Okay.
The original Doctor Strange is directed by Scott Derrickson, who did Exorcism of Emily Rose and Sinister. So the character already has kind of a supernatural horror bent, but the Multiverse of Madness goes full Sam Raimi. I mean, it really does. And you can't even give a synopsis of the thing without spoiling things that I think are more fun to realize on your own. But let's just say that, you know, Doctor Strange basically meets a girl who can jump from universe to universe. You know, there's a multiverse similar to Spider-Man No Way Home.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Doctor Strange, because of Spider-Man No Way Home, he's hip to multiverses, but he doesn't know even nearly as deep as they go like this girl does. And there's a demon pursuing this girl who wants her power to jump from multiverse to multiverse, because they can't, basically, if this demon gets this power, all multiverses will implode. So Doctor Strange has to help her. And there's, you know, they go from universe to universe, and each universe is not wild. Some of them are wildly different, but some of them are just subtly different, and you don't quite know the differences. One thing that they do is they try to find the Doctor Strange in each universe they go to. And sometimes he's dead. Sometimes he's other, it's weird. Like, different things have happened in different universes.
They showed in the trailer that there is a zombie Doctor Strange, which it's the same one from, is it the same one from What If?
Oh, I didn't watch What If, but there is the third act goes full Raimi, and that's part of it. And that's a little bit of a spoiler that there's a zombie Doctor Strange.
Well, like I said, it was shown in all the trailers. Yeah. That was like the hype moment of the trailer. So that's the only reason why I brought it up.
That's one of the parts that goes full Raimi, and how it gets there is crazy though. So yeah, I don't even want to talk too much about it because also there are so many, like, some of it's fan service, but some of it is just totally cool. There are a couple of moments where Marvel fans will just stand up and cheer.
Oh, because, I bet.
Yeah, you kind of expect that with Marvel movies, you know, that there's going to be like some surprise makes you go, yeah. But this one, even telling you who the main antagonist is a spoiler. So, yeah. And it's revealed very early in the movie. But it's much better if you go into the movie not knowing it. So yeah, if you're seeing it tomorrow, Jacob, don't, you know, if you haven't even watched a trailer, don't even watch a trailer, you know, just.
And I'm trying to go in as blind as possible.
Yeah. Do that. Cause it'll be so much more fun, but yeah, it is. And I'll tell you one thing though, is Sam Raimi's humor is all over it. And
good.
And Dr. Strange's sentient cloak just lends itself to Raimi's humor. Let me just tell you that. Cause that cloak is hysterical.
Just a lot of Three Stooges esque gags throughout.
A little, not a lot, but they're, but yeah, the cloak is the shimp. Yeah.
It's pretty the cloak fun. Is the cloak is voiced by Ted Raimi.
No. And Bruce Campbell, to answer another question, Bruce Campbell is in it.
Oh, I knew it.
Of course. It's a Sam Raimi movie.
Yeah. Now, there was one title I know that Jacob's been plugging for years that I finally watched. Jay, did you also?
I did.
This too. Week?
Yeah.
So it looks like Jay and I both finally watched Dude Bro Party Massacre 3.
Yes. And
what did you think, Jay?
It's rough. I didn't realize it was done by the 5 Second Films guys.
Yeah.
And their shtick in 5 seconds is awesome. In 90 minutes, I think it gets a little old. I thought the whole thing was kind of silly.
The gore
effects are awesome. The thing is, it's different from Astron 6 silly, though. Astron 6 silly is, I think you're laughing with them, and this one I was laughing at them. You know, I don't know. But I did enjoy the one kill where Motherface flushes the guy's intestines down the toilet while they're in him, and they're just like going. And that was kind of fun. I mean, it had its moments, but I just thought it was kind of dumb. Yeah. What did you think? What'd you think, Korea?
I had fun with it. I definitely need to watch it again because it's definitely one of those. I feel like it's one of those comedies where, like, not everything landed with me the first viewing, but with a second viewing, it's just gonna hit harder. I really appreciate, you know, the lo-fi-ness of it. How they, like, not only leaned into the lack of money and all that, but they, like, fully embraced it. Like, there's one part where you can clearly tell, like, they're supposed to be out in the woods, but, like, it's clearly someone's backyard with a bunch of old Christmas trees behind them. I think it was like the third act or something. But yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. I mean, there's a lot of comedies that I did not like the first, or didn't like that much the first time. And then I went back and rewatched it and was like, oh shit. Yeah, no, this is actually really funny. So I definitely need to watch it again.
There are a few places that got a genuine laugh out of me. I like the commercials because the whole premise of it is it's taped off TV in the 90s. So that's also explained some of the lo-fi-ness. And the guy was pausing for commercials, the guy that was recording it. So you get like the beginning and the end of these commercials. And one of them, it's not a commercial. It's like a newscast where they're talking about, they're all, and we'll have news 11. And at that point in the movie, one of the characters is looking for another one. He's going, Sizzler, Sizzler. And the newscasters are doing their thing. And he walks behind them on the news set. He's all, Sizzler. That was actually pretty funny.
Yeah. Also, still a highlight for me was Patton Oswalt as the chief of police.
Oh, yeah.
I was impressed with the cast. I mean, they got like they had
Larry King.
Larry King, but I'm telling myself a little bit when I say porn star Nina Hartley plays the dean. I'm familiar with her work. She was also in Boogie Nights, though, so I can say it's because of that. She was Little Bill's wife, the slutty wife in Boogie Nights. So
we'll accept that answer, Jay.
And of course, Andrew WK.
Yeah, Andrew WK's in it too. Yep. Yeah.
A part of me did die that day.
And Greg
Sestero.
Sestero, there we go. Sestero,
yeah. From, you almost said Nicotero, didn't you?
No, I fully blanked. We got to stop recording this so damn early. After I go see drag shows, guys. We can't record morning after drag shows.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you.
Because that's all I want to talk about. Which, by the way, if Dracula season 4 tour is coming to a town near you, go. It is fucking incredible. When I went, they had Bitter Betty come out and she was dressed up like a Terminator meets Dolly Parton. And that was her whole shtick too, was like glitching out.
Dollinator.
Oh, dude, it was great. And then Saint was a Leatherface dancing to Megan Thee Stallion's Bodies. Just a fabulous show. And then, of course, the Boulez themselves did an incredible Immortan Joe meets Bride of Frankenstein set. Oh, yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, although I was going to say back on Dude Bar Party Massacre 3, I think this one of the reasons why it made such a big impact on me was that I saw it with an audience like that. Mm. That was definitely a factor. Also, I just really love it because as a child of the 90s, I grew up on a lot of stupid and crazy direct-to-video sequels down the lines of horror franchises. And they even said in the Q&A, the 5 Second Films guys, that, you know, they decided to make a slasher movie from the third movie because the third movie is always when slasher movies in the franchise start to go really off the rails.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's just so many silly and just insane moments through the movie, like the part town thing with the drowned town and Motherface killing that one guy with like a mind control device. Yeah. And
yeah,
my god. And it's a very ridiculous movie, but I feel like it's in kind of a loving homage to ridiculous ass horror sequels.
I imagine it would be better with an audience too, because it is it's that kind of stupid where, like, you know, like The Room, you know, if you try to watch The Room without an audience, it's not the same, you know, you're just like, oh, what is this crap? But then, you know, when you get in a collective group,
yeah.
People say the same thing about Rocky Horror, but I think Rocky Horror stands up without an audience.
Yeah, true. I was going to say, like, funny enough, back on the Sizzler joke, I actually got the Dude Bro Party Master 3 soundtrack recently, and the final track is just him yelling, Sizzler, Sizzler, and it's on a loop, so if you keep it going, it just keeps on yelling Sizzler forever.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
You can sleep and you wake up and Sizzler,
Sizzler.
I just love that opening montage where they're like, he's seeing a therapist and he's like recounting the first two movies. Like that's exactly, cause that's what they do in the third movie. They usually by that one, they kill off the original person, but then it's his twin brother. It's not Brock. It's Brent, you know?
Well, weird.
Yeah. I thought you were Brock. No, I'm Brent.
No, I love that.
Or just when they get into the paddle boats and the one guy's in the wheelchair, he's like, is there a paddle boat for me? Yeah, 5 miles down the road. Well, what am I supposed to do? Guess you're supposed to hike. They just like leave him. It's so fucked. It's great.
Yeah, no, just there's so many great just weird one-off gags like that. And also, like, there's a picture or bust of Ronald Reagan in almost every scene.
I didn't notice that. See, that's something to go back to.
Yeah, it's one of those running gags, especially because the buildup, like, Brett has that vision where he thinks Motherface is Ronald Reagan. Face it, Motherface. You are our nation's 40th president.
And he has this elaborate scheme where it's true. You know, he like explains it Scooby-Doo style, how it actually is true.
Oh, man, I felt I really had that one. On another note, I've been watching some new movies out of Panic Fest. Last year they were virtual. This year they're doing hybrid virtual. So they are doing some stuff in person, but a lot of it's still online. So I had to see a few fun things. Like, I think probably the one I had the most fun with so far has been this one called Crabs with an exclamation mark. It's kind of like Tremors at a seaside town. It's like, you know, horseshoe crabs, they get mutated by nuclear waste or nuclear meltdown. And it's up to this ragtag bunch of weird characters to save the town on prom night because they keep on growing bigger and starting eating people. But also they got like this kind of gremlins thing going where they kind of fart around and like start wearing hats or like messing around with like computers and stuff. So I dug that. Let's see. Also saw this kind of survival supernatural horror movie called Revealer, which is set in 80s Miami, and this stripper and this conservative Christian protester end up stuck inside this peep show place when the rapture or apocalypse happens, and they have to try and find a way to survive together. And let's see, there was also this one, The Chamber of Terror, about this mob that takes people to be killed and executed at this old abandoned haunted house, right, called the Chamber of Terror, but it turns out it's actually haunted. And this other one, Presence, about these two entrepreneurs who go on this tech guy's yacht, but there's like something haunting them. So, you know, I really love that a lot of festivals kept up being virtual, just because it allots a lot of people to be able to see movies on the festival circuit they otherwise wouldn't. And as always, there's always some gems out there.
And some people still aren't ready to go back to full theaters either.
Oh, exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, even me, I've gone to, you know, a couple of showings, but it's always like middle of the day, midweek, you know, trying to avoid crowds.
Yeah. But either way, I really hope that festivals at least keep up a hybrid format, because both for accessibility and safety for people who don't feel like going to theaters. But mostly, yeah, I just feel like it gets these movies out to more people. And that's what the filmmakers would want, I'd imagine.
Yeah, the filmmakers, I think, would want that. But the festival organizers, I think, do a little bit of gatekeeping. They like it to be like, you know, exclusive, you know, come to Sundance and see this. So we'll see how that plays out. I'm with you. I hope that they do still keep some virtual aspects, but I can see them, you know, wanting people to travel to their festival, kind of a thing.
All right.
Well, I mean, like for something like Sundance, there's always going to be that big crowd that's like there for Sundance, you know, that's there to buy the movies, you know, especially like, you know, the more celebrity or, you know, high profile cases are always going to go, but it is also good to like get it out there. I mean, Sundance made a killing doing virtual. I think it was their most attended year.
Oh yeah.
Because
of course. Yeah.
So, I mean, like you're not going to deny that money, but yeah, you're also not going to deny the type of money that you can make off of vendors and concessions and, you know, advertisement and sponsorship with live one too. So I mean, hybrid is probably the way to go. The smaller festivals might be a little bit more difficult because you're not getting as much money, you know, pumped in. But yeah, I always hope for hybrid, anything to get, you know, word out on projects that people work so hard on, you know.
I think if anything, smaller festivals might swing the opposite direction and go fully hybrid, because you don't have to rent a theater out, and you know, you know, there's less overhead, which, you know, that'll be kind of backfiring, because I think the theatrical experience is probably what a lot of people want. But the festivals that aren't Sundance, you know, may swing the other way. Who knows? We'll see.
Another, or real quick, not entirely horror, but finally saw Strawberry Mansion. I don't know if you guys have heard of this. It's directed by Kentucker Aldi and Albert Burney. It's really phenomenal. It's about in the future, your dreams are taxed. And so this dream tax auditor goes to meet with this woman and ends up, you know, going on this journey. It's very phenomenal. Dan Deacon, who's one of my favorite artists, did the score for it, which is absolutely phenomenal. And it's very, you know, fantastical. You know, the dream sequences are a bit lo-fi, but are a lot of fun, and just highly recommended. I got it on a Vudu sale the other day for like $5, and I can't recommend it enough. It's just very nice, you know, palate cleanser, especially after getting so creeped out by a double feature of Hatching and We're All Going to the World's Fair.
What is it called? Yep.
Strawberry Mansion. Yeah, it's sometimes, you know, when you have stuff where like people are going into dreams, people go a bit too far with the weirdness or too far with the fantastical. I feel like this movie walked a very nice fine line.
The dream tax concept has me intrigued.
Yeah, it's very interesting because like the dreams are uploaded to like a memory stick, but this woman that he's auditing had all her dreams recorded onto VHS tapes. And he's like, well, how many tapes do you have? She's like 2000. And he's like, oh, crap. So he's like going through each tape and you see like a hologram of him in the tape. And she has like a dream where it's like she's playing with like a caterpillar on her hand. And the next thing you know, she's in a restaurant and the waiter's a guy with a giant frog head playing saxophone and stuff. So it gets into it like balances the weirdness really well. But there's like a whole conspiracy theory going on that corporations are putting ads into people's dreams that he uncovers and stuff. And it's really good. Like if you, it's I don't want to make the comparison, but it's a, if you like Eternal Sunshine and the Spotless Mind, it kind of is like that. Kind of, you
that's kind of weird because you already know that, like, if you are supposed, like, say you're talking about, you know, paint, you know, you're discussing, you know, paint colors with Lindsay, all of a sudden ads for paint will show up like in your Facebook feed. It already seems like Big Brother is listening. That would be scary if they could somehow find a way to program, because some people say that they can program their own dreams.
Yeah.
It would be interesting if, I mean, that would be dangerous if an advertiser could figure out how to mass program people to dream.
Yeah.
That reminds me, there was actually a joke on Futurama about that, where, you know, Fry, who's from the year 2000, gets frozen and ends up in the year 3000. And one night he has a dream where he's in class in his underwear, but it turns out it's an ad for an underwear company. And he wakes up, it's like, oh man, I had the craziest dream last night where that turned into a commercial for underpants. Oh yeah, you know, oh, so you had just a commercial dream and yeah, like in the future, just they can program dreams into they can program commercials into your dreams. And they're just like, you know, just ignore it. You know, it happens to everybody.
Yeah. And that's kind of like it is like it opens up with the guy having a dream, and he's having a dream of his dream buddy, and his dream buddy's like, oh, don't worry, I got us this bucket of fried chicken, just how you like it, extra crispy with double gravy. And like he it shows him like getting up and then going to the place, and then he's in the drive-through for the fried chicken place, and you know, and they just kind of like, and he gives into like them going, and do you want the chicken shake? And they're like, what's a chicken shake? Oh, it's, you know, it's a shake made out of chicken. No, I'll just get this. Actually, you know, yeah, I'll get the shake too. You know, it plays a little fun, but that's only like part of the story. Like it's really whimsical, lots of fun. And again, the score is, of course, it's Dan Deacon, so it's phenomenal.
That would totally work, because you know how sometimes you're dreaming about like eating donuts, and then you wake up and you're like, shoot, I don't have a donut. that would totally work if someone figured out how to do that. We have a special guest right now. We've got filmmaker, musician, archivist, a little bit of everything, Kevin Von Esper. How you doing, Kevin?
Hello. This is my eye on horror. See,
this is an audio
fly swatters. I know I have to describe it for the audience.
Yeah,
this is the cover of an ads record with Dookie Fly Swatter's eye as photographed by legendary punk photographer Edward Culver. And of course, this is a attached to it is a rat trap from the vinyl Haunted Garage performance, and this actually was on Dookie's eye. He's famous for putting rat traps on his eyelids, and I thought it would be perfect for you because you guys are eye on horror.
It is perfect. Awesome. And Okay, so the big thing that Kevin's doing right now is a documentary about Dookie Flyswatter. But before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about you.
Sure.
What do you do? I mean, let's just get into who is right. Kevin Von Esper?
Well, professionally, for the past 15 or so years, I've been a videographer, video editor, music producer, photographer, doing all that kind of stuff under my company, Von Esper Studios. And then, of course, during the pandemic is when kind of all my jobs stopped happening, because all my jobs happen around people and gatherings. And so it kind of got derailed, and I had to refocus my energies and start some internal projects. So I decided the best marriage of my professional and my personal, passions would be this documentary about Dookie Flyswatter.
That kind of leads into my next question. Why Dookie Flyswatter? What, I mean, I know the big thing with documentaries, you're always trying to find the story. What yeah. about Dookie you think will make a good documentary?
Have you guys heard of Dookie Flyswatter before?
Oh, yeah.
This?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
A bit. Yeah. But if you want to give us a brief sure. overall.
Yeah. I was going to say, because yeah. if one of you hadn't heard of him before, I would say that's why, because you all need to hear about Dookie Flyswatter.
Well, I was just telling Korea, he was in two of my favorite movies from 88, The Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers and Sorority Babes in the Slimeball Bowl-O-Rama. Oh, we have visual aids coming up.
We have props.
There he goes. Yeah, yeah. He's got VHS of the two movies I just named. There they are.
Yes, you'll see him in Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers, Sorority Babes in the Slimeball Bowl-O-Rama, Nightmare Sisters.
Yeah, he had the Linnea Quigley triple feature of 88 with Nightmare Sisters.
Yeah, and actually Sorority Babes and Nightmare Sisters were the only two movies in the 80s that starred the big three Scream Queens. And they both included Dookie Flyswatter. One of them has a soundtrack by Haunted Garage themselves. And they were filmed literally days apart from each other. So those are like, I would say those two movies and Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers, like you just mentioned, are like the three holy trinity of like 80s Scream Queen horror.
Sorority Babes and the Slimeball Bowl-O-Rama was filmed at the mall that I grew up in.
Really? That's awesome. Which mall was that?
It's called Plaza Camino Real. It's in this tri-city area of Carlsbad, Oceanside, Vista. It's actually kind of funny because I didn't know it until I was watching the movie. And I'm like, wait, that's our mall.
That is awesome. That's a personal touch for sure.
Well, right after they shot it, they remodeled the entire mall and it looked completely different. So it's only people who knew it back then. But, you know, you could see and you could see the storage. You could say, oh, there's Orange Julius. There's Chess King. You know,
that's awesome.
And that's how old it was, because Orange Julius and Chess King were still things.
Malls were still a thing.
Yeah.
Is that where a Chopping Mall was filmed too?
No.
No, I believe that was at the Galleria. Because and I know that because I just got in the mail this week my Blu-ray collector's pack. This is a little sideline from Dookie Flyswatter, sort of. I'll connect it. But it was Phantom of the Mall, Eric's Revenge.
Yes.
Which just came out on Arrow Blu-ray. And that was filmed at the same mall. And, you know, they did Chopping Mall there, Commando, like all sorts of movies were filmed there. I'm waiting for somebody, maybe somebody did and I just haven't found it yet. I'm waiting for somebody to edit together a movie just about like all the crazy stuff, as if all these things were happening one day at this mall, because they are all filmed there. There's a whole movie waiting to be edited together. And the connection there is in the showers. No, it's a. They're watching girls in the changing room on like a security camera in that movie. And one of the girls is Brink Stevens. So there you go. You can connect Dookie to any kind of B movie from the 80s. I swear.
there's gotta be an edit or so, you know, there's definitely a project there. Cause Jacob in our previous episode was just talking about a film where they edited all the airport movies into one movie.
Yeah. So this is literally the same mall in every movie. So like it's right there. I mean,
There's got to be something where it's like, and meanwhile, on the other side of the mall.
Or a documentary. Maybe that's my next documentary. I don't know. The Galleria Chopping Mall. Oh, my God. Who wouldn't want to see that?
The world's most cinematic mall.
I know. And in Phantom of the Mall, there's actually the most interesting man in the world is in that movie. So, you know, from the Dos Equis commercials.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So how did this project come about? You said it was kind of born of necessity from COVID. So, I mean,
So, well, let me take you all the way back to 1990, let's say two, right? Sure. I'm about 8 years old and, you know, the grunge era is just ending because Kurt Cobain just passed away. Right. So my first love of music was kind of, I needed something else and I discovered Green Jello. Right. And, so I was very, because that was a very popular song at the time. It's strange to think about that now because of how weird that was, but it was actually very popular, The Three Little Pigs. And little did I know, there's a video on here called, can I curse on this?
Of course. Absolutely.
Okay, The Misadventures of Shitman, which featured a Dookie Flyswatter turning into this character Shitman alongside other people such as Danny Carey, who was in Green Jello at the time, and was forming his own band in their studio called Tool. I don't know what happened to them. I heard they used to open for Haunted Garage. I guess they're still around. And yeah, that led me to discover Gwar, you know, because that's the next band you find. Once you discover one band that's put stupid stuff on their head, then you kind of like open a whole world of trouble. And so I discovered Gwar, and then the next band I discovered was a little bit more obscure and a little bit more mysterious, and that was Haunted Garage. And this was, let's skip to like 1994. I'm like 10 years old, and I'm starting the internet's first Haunted Garage fan site because there was none. And I was on a quest for information even back then.
And the internet was pretty new back then, too.
It was pretty new. Wow. Yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah.
And you were doing this at 10.
Yeah. 10 or 11.
Wow. Yeah.
I was using the allmusic.com algorithms to discover bands. And that's how I discovered. And I'm pretty sure that's still the algorithm that Spotify uses, because I still see the same suggested artists for my favorite bands. So I think they stole it. Just putting that out there. And then, yeah, that Haunted Garage broke up originally in 1992, while all these other bands like Gwar are still continuing till today. So there was always a little bit more mystery and a little bit more to discover from them. And it was a little bit harder to find Haunted Garage things because they only had one album. And then I discovered Dookie Flyswatter was a B-movie actor and writer, and he wrote Blood Diner and stuff like that. So then I started getting into B-movies, and it was just a whole nother world of interest for me. And then skip to the pandemic, you know, the how many years late, 25 or so years later, I'm looking for something to do. I'm digitizing my VHS tapes, you know, as a hobby. And like, cause I used to do like tape trading back in like the 90s, I would trade bootlegged VHS and cassette tapes, you know? And I just figured, you know what? There's not a better time to start this project. You know, most of the people involved are still alive and accessible, and yeah. You never know, like, in especially in the early days of the pandemic, like who's gonna just die overnight, you know? So I just started messaging people and seeing if they would be into it if I started it. And now I have 40 something interviews, and I've archived Dookie's archive, you know, of tapes, and just it just started rolling, and I'm on a quest to complete it now.
Yeah. So a lot of this concert footage is shot by various sources, various people all over. It wasn't just one singular source for it.
Well, the source of the material came from mostly several main sources like Dookie and other band members. But who shot them? Some of them I know, some of them I don't. You know, I have pictures of people with video cameras at Haunted Garage shows that I'm trying to identify. You know, I know there's more out there because I have pictures of them. I'm like, who is this guy with a video camera? We got to find him. And I've actually found some by doing just that. Like somebody had identified themselves on a photograph and found like their last show from the 90s in a storage unit, you know, bin. And And now we have stuff that nobody would have ever seen before. And before, and that's part of my goal for this project, is to dig all this stuff out of the closets and the garages, as you will, to preserve it, because otherwise nobody's looking for it and it might be lost to time, you know, in a few years.
Yeah. And that's really important, because this is a very specific time. This is a very specific thing. And like you said, there might, the bands might only put out one album, but they did shows for like 10 years. And that's, and unless people, you know, it's preserved and all that, it's not going to be seen. Are you, after the documentary, what's going to happen with this archive?
That's a good question. If there's a demand for it, maybe we can start releasing it. Well, I can tell you one thing that we're doing is, I found tons of old demo tapes and stuff that they've recorded that have never been heard unless you were either in the band or in their very close circles. Songs that they wrote for movies that Dookie was in that weren't used, such as songs for like Surf Nazis Must Die and Star Slammer, if you know that movie. I found the Nightmare Sisters soundtrack. I found songs they submitted to the Hellraiser 3 soundtrack that were never used.
Oh, dope.
And all this stuff, it's gold. It's nuggets of gold straight from the cassette tapes that are available on there on my fundraiser on the Indiegogo, available for the first time ever, because I took the time to dig them up and archive them and transfer them from cassette. So don't sleep on it. If you're a B movie, you know, horror punk fan of any kind, nuggets of gold, I'm telling you.
Now, is this just with all the video footage and, you know, all the different sources from the video and audio, is this a rights nightmare, or are people just signing the rights over to you?
So far, I've been pretty lucky. Like anything that the band owns, I don't have, you know, I have a right, you know, rights to use so far. There's been no trouble for that kind of stuff. I haven't dug too far into the movie rights. I think some of the directors are going to be pretty willing to share some footage with me. And then other stuff, like say the Montel Williams show that he was on, or like the Name That Tune he was on from the 80s, or like maybe his finding him as an extra in, say, The Bodyguard, you know, which is a thing. Those maybe might be a little bit more difficult, but we will see. I haven't gotten quite that far yet. But that's why I need the support, because I know licensing and like just getting lawyers to make contracts for you, that's like been the most expensive thing so far in this whole project.
Was he just like Alice Cooper of the 90s? Was he just like everywhere? You say he's on Name That Tune and on Montel Williams. Like, because Alice Cooper would pop up in Bob Hope golf tournaments and center square of Hollywood Square.
Him and other members of the band, when they were not on stage, would do extra work for like their day job and stuff like that. So members of the band, Dookie and other people, some of the girls, you'd find them in Terminator 2, Kindergarten Cop, The Mask, The Bodyguard, Tales from the Crypt, the original Flash TV series, you know, the DC property, just like all sorts of places. I always say, like, everybody out there, including your mother, has seen Dookie Flyswatter somewhere. We just don't know where yet.
Yeah.
And I have to point this out to everybody, because it's hilarious. It's like kind of like a subliminal thing, like you've seen Dookie Flyswatter, but you just didn't know his name or his story.
Yeah, well, it's always interesting, because you know of like the famous examples of musicians popping up in movies, like Anthony Kiedis in Point Break, or X popped up a bunch, like in Roadhouse, and all those.
Yeah, I think some members of 45 Grave and people like that are in our Blade Runner and stuff like that.
John Doe was in Boogie Nights, my favorite movie of all time.
Oh wow, really?
He was Amber Waves' ex-husband.
That's awesome. They're playing New York soon. I gotta get a ticket.
Yeah,
I was just talking about that yesterday.
They're going to keep going forever, X.
Yeah, but it's amazing. Like, they actually have a full, like, original lineup still and everything.
Yeah, they didn't for a while. They had a different guitar, but Billy Zoom is back. Yeah.
Incredible.
I hope they come to L.A. sometime soon again.
Well, they have to, you know, because they're from LA,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. They'll come home eventually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Los Angeles. You know, Haunted Garage covered an X song once, and I have a recording of it. It was the night that the restrictions were lifted from the, oh my God, I'm blanking on the name. Sorry, it's so early for me. big riots in the 90s. Police and
the LA riots.
Who was that?
The Rodney King.
Yeah,
the
Rodney King
riots. Yeah. Yeah, we're just the restrictions were lifted that night, and they played like the first show on the strip, like since they were lifted, and everyone was just going nuts. And they opened their set with Los Angeles by X, and then followed it up with All Hell Breaks Loose by the Misfits.
I remember I was at in LA. Not the criminal trial where they were all found not guilty, but the civil trial where I think two of them were found liable.
You went to that?
No, the day that verdict was handed down, I went to a Rage Against the Machine show in LA that night, and I'm like, yeah, is this going to be safe? And it was completely safe, but
I'm sure everyone was having a real good time, right?
Yeah. Well, and also
another band that started in Green Jelly Studios, more or less.
Yeah, they were pals with them too. All the only thing that happened is before they played Killing in the Name, Zach said, he's all, earlier today someone asked if I thought justice had been served, and then they launched into it. So that's the only thing that happened. But we were a little nervous. We're like, is there gonna be, like, you know, because only two of the four got found liable. We're like, is this going to be safe? But it was fine.
Just a lot of pent up energy. No, like criminal violence, I'm sure. Yeah, it's exciting times, and it's, you know, that's all part of the story now.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so the documentary itself, can you walk us through what, I mean, it's obviously going to be about Dookie Flyswatter, but is it going to just kind of beginning to end, or I mean, what's the arc there?
Yeah. See. The arc is sort of the anti-arc. You know, I call this like sort of the anti-documentary, because usually there's like a success story, and the whole story of Haunted Garage is like a comedy of errors that ended up with them not being successful, even though they should be, in my opinion, one of the biggest bands in the world, because they broke up in late 1992, and they were playing with Tool, they were playing with White Zombie, they were playing with Soundgarden, they were scheduled to play with Nirvana, they were playing with L7, like all these bands that just kind of like went straight up into the spotlight in 1993, let's say. And I swear if Haunted Garage had one extra year, they would be there with them playing, you know, arenas now, like Rob Zombie does with his horror show. And you know, they would have been the ultimate music video band. Like, it was the perfect time for MTV. They had the perfect company with Dookie and his B-movie career and his director friends and actor friends. And they actually did film one music video for their album, Possession Park, but it never even got printed from the film, as far as I know. Like, it's a lost project. It was never completed. And it's just a comedy of errors. Like, they tried to do all these cool things, and it just, for some reason, didn't work out. And that's kind of the story, is that if you don't know about this band, like, it's going to blow your mind that this existed and you missed it.
Is the documentary going to be more about Haunted Garage, or is it going to be more about Dookie's film career?
Sure. I think it's going to be a perfect marriage of both, because actually their careers were very intertwined. Like, Haunted Garage actually started in 1985, and that's about the same time Dookie started doing his movie career. And like I said, I found demos of them. They wrote songs for some of the movies. In the case of Nightmare Sisters, they actually did get that into the movie. But the other ones, they didn't, and those songs were lost to time. And then, you know, Haunted Garage themselves were actually in a movie called Cyclone. So they were kind of, and also in a movie called Breakfast of Aliens, that was originally called What's Happening to Walter. And that was filmed in like 1988, but didn't get released until the mid 90s. So they were already broken up before they had like this big scene in this movie. So it's very like closely knit story to begin with. So I think it's going to be the perfect amalgamation of both.
Yeah.
If that makes sense to you.
Are you seeing more people getting more interested, not just because of the project, because a lot of these titles that we're mentioning from Dookie are being released by labels like Vinegar Syndrome and Arrow and whatnot. Are you seeing an increase in like people's interest in Dookie? Or?
Well, yeah, I think it takes a project like this to use a word, expose the world to Dookie Flyswatter. People know these movies and they're popular within the genre and the retro VHS culture and everything, especially those movies. Like those are like the top of the list for the collectors, right? Like Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers, Surf Nazis Must Die. Those are the ones you remember the most. And they just might not know that this guy, Michael Sunny, in these movies is Dookie Flyswatter from Haunted Garage. And once they put all the pieces together, they're going to be like, oh my God, of course I know that guy. He's the crazy bartender in Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers, or the guy who gets his head ripped off in the beginning of Nightmare Sisters. Like it all makes sense now.
That's actually true. Cause he used his real name for his movie career mostly.
Well, at a certain point it kind of changed. Yeah. You can kind of see the change. I think Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers might be the first movie where he uses the moniker Dookie Flyswatter. And then it's just Dookie from there on in. But yeah, there's a lot of movies. There's like, He wrote a movie that Sharon Stone started in the late 80s, like one of her first movies, stuff like that, that you would never think that Dookie Flyswatter was associated with. And people need to know.
Now, you, of course, have been talking about how great the band is music wise, but what happens typically? Or what would happen at a typical like haunted mansion show, you know, like Wars Got There or Haunted, my apologies.
Haunted Mansion is the big budget version.
But what would happen at a haunted garage show? I mean, like we talked about Gwar, you know, they got their space monster costumes and stuff, but Haunted Garage was a bit more brutal in some ways.
In a way, yeah. So the difference between Haunted Garage and Gwar, and they do get a lot of comparisons, A, because they were on the same record label. And then of course, like there wasn't many bands doing anything like that at the time. So it was easy to compare one theatrical horror band to another theatrical horror band. Mm-hmm. But the difference is Gwar did their show in character, these larger than life characters that tell like this comic book story. Whereas Haunted Garage were just being versions of themselves. And that's the element that made it a little bit more scary, because you're like, hey, I know that guy. Wait, he's piercing himself right now? Or, you know, you might see him pierce himself and see some real blood, or you might get some Hudson sprayer in your face of some fake blood. You might see him do some fire tricks. He's set his arms on fire, or like flash paper from the rear end to simulate. You can just imagine, you know, the dancing girls. You might see, depending on the age that was led into the show at the time, you know, some fleshiness, you know, you might see some mouse traps on his eyelids or other parts of his body, depending on the show. Just, it was kind of like, one of the guitar players was in drag, which was, I would say, not very popular at the time as it is now. It was a little bit more underground and risque. So yeah, you never really knew what you were going to see. You'd probably see him rev up a chainsaw and chainsaw somebody on stage and then throw their guts into the audience. And let me tell you, like that chainsaw in a small club, that makes a really loud sound, you know? So it's shocking. So yeah, those are the things you would see at a Haunted Garage show. It's a little bit scary, but a whole lot of fun, and definitely always with a sense of humor.
Yeah, and watching the trailer you put together and a lot of that footage, it definitely gave me reminiscent thoughts of Herschel Gordon Lewis, you know, well, but yeah, live.
funny you say that, because we haven't yet, but we're supposed to interview Jimmy Maslin, who actually owns the Herschel Gordon Lewis catalog.
Oh, and wow.
Because of that, he produced a movie that Dookie wrote called Blood Diner that you might know.
Yeah.
Which was originally supposed to be a sequel to Blood Feast, Herschel Gordon Lewis's Blood Feast. And so it's all connected, even Herschel Gordon Lewis.
Oh, that makes sense. I just watched Blood Diner earlier this week to familiarize myself a bit more. And yeah, I haven't watched that since I was, you know, young in the VHS store. So that,
yeah, it's,
I can see the connections there.
And there's a brain in a jar in it and everything.
Oh, yeah. My favorite part of Blood Diner is just definitely the insistence. Something like this hasn't been done in 5 million years. Yeah. No. Has this been done before? Not in 5 million years. Just like the constant of bringing that up was so great. Funny.
Yeah, Dookie was going to play the guy in the movie with the dummy. But okay. once Jackie Kong was... the director, she had no writers on set rule, so he got recast.
Oh no.
Yeah, and the original casting for the leads in his script, you know, I don't think they changed much of the words in the script, but the tone changed a little bit because the two leads were supposed to be kind of like these ugly guys, and they were supposed to be George the Animal Steele, and he was going to be the wrestler, and Michael Berryman from The Hills Have Eyes and stuff like that. And so they I don't think they could afford them. That's probably the real reason that it changed. But now they became like these two very attractive young men doing all these crazy killings. And that changed the tone of the movie a lot. And Carl Crewe, who plays, oh boy, what's his character's name? I can't remember right now, but Georgie, he is in the documentary and he owns a club in LA called California Institute of Abnormal Arts.
That's right down the street from me. I go there a lot. That's awesome.
Oh, good. Well, we actually shot most of the documentary down the street from you because we were a stone throw away from CIA the whole time.
Oh, that's awesome. See,
North Hollywood. Yeah.
See, it's all connected to Dookie Flyswatter.
Even you.
Cool. Well, we're running out of time, but there's one more thing that I do want to ask you about. I looked on your Twitter account and it's just listed green jello. Well, green jelly, but it's always green jello to us. And then there's no connection there. What is the green jello connection?
Okay. Well, I was a member of Green Jelly, actually. So, I mean, they were my favorite band, you know, when I discovered them in like 1992. And they kind of were the reason, as I was saying before, that I kind of got led into this whole wacky world. And then in 2008, they went on their first tour since the 90s. If you can believe that, they only went on one tour to support Three Little Pigs and that record. And then they kind of like
became Tool. You
know, yeah. Kind of became Tool and a bunch of other bands, I'm sure. And they were kind of an LA staple, but they finally went back on tour in 2008 and I met them on their first leg of it. And I told one of them, hey, if you ever need a bass player for the next leg or whatever, hit me up. And so happens that they did. So I flew out to LA and I joined Green Jello and the Radioactive Chickenheads and Rosemary's Billy Goat. And we all shared a bus and we all shared band members. And so the direct connection is that I am member number 237 of Green Jello.
Nice.
And Dookie Flyswatter and Haunted Garage, they used to play together all the time with Green Jello and be in each other's videos. And actually on their second album, if you hear the anthem song, if you listen closely, you can hear Dookie Flyswatter's background vocals in the audience alongside Weird Al Yankovic.
You know, it's funny, your Twitter actually does say Green Jelly number 237. So that's what that means. Okay. So you're the...
Okay. Yeah. I'm number 237. Now they have over 1,000 members. So I'm considered old school already.
All right. Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us. Where can people find you?
Yeah. DookieDuck.com is the easiest way to find everything. DukeyDoc.com. I got to spell it out so people don't look like that Green Day album cover. You know, DukeyDoc.com. There's an Indiegogo there. I'm calling it the Indiegorgor campaign, emphasis on the pain. There's lots of great perks. Please support an independent grassroots DIY documentary project about underground culture. Like, even if you're not totally into it, you know, get a sticker for $5 or just share it with your friends. Someone's going to love this stuff. I'm easy to find. Kevin Von Esper, you know, just Dookie Doc on Twitter. I don't use that much, but Instagram is where I hang out most of the time.
We'll post all the links in the show notes.
Thank
you. And Dookie Flyswatter, like Kevin said, if you don't know him, you probably do know him. You just don't know that you know him. Yeah. You've
and
seen
if you
him.
Like underground culture, punk rock, horror movies, B-horror movies, anything like that. Like, there's something in here for everybody.
Or if you've seen The Bodyguard, apparently.
Or if you've seen The Bodyguard, you've seen Dookie. It's like subliminal messaging.
Yeah.
That green hair just for a few frames.
And you never know. You might also be connected to Dookie. I mean, that was eye-opening for me. Within a half hour, that's were able to 7 degrees me to Dookie.
That's what we do here on Eye on Horror.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Kevin, for joining us. Our theme song is by Restless Spirit, so go and give them a listen. Our artwork is by Chris Fisher, so go give him a look. You can find us at any of the socials, Eye on Horror, or at ihorror.com. So give us a shout out. And we will see you in a couple weeks. So for me, James J. Edwards.
I'm Jacob Davison.
I'm Jonathan Correa.
I'm Kevin Von Esper.
Keep your eye on horror.